Hi, this is Joe Murray, creator of Rocco's Modern Life and Camp Lazlo. You're listening to Mr. Media.
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to artist Drew Friedman, whose latest collection of celebrity and political caricatures is Too Soon. Actually, it's Too Soon? Famous, Infamous Faces, 1995-2010. Stick around.
Hey, did you know that you can listen to the latest Mr. Media show right on your phone with the Stitcher app? Stitcher's smart radio for your smartphone. Mr. Media is on demand and on the go with Stitcher. Download Stitcher for your phone today. Get the free app at www.stitcher.com. That's S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R.com.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. You know, MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com. Stop by and check it out. There are more than 600 archived celebrity interviews for your listening pleasure. The show is brought to you today by ThePartyAuthority.us. Planning a wedding, mitzvah, or corporate event in the New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania area? For any and all occasions, call The Party Authority nationwide at 1-800-DIAL-BJ's. That's 1-800-342-5357, where one call does it all. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of small-minded white men with giant heads in the new media capital of the world and home of the best team in baseball, St. Petersburg, Florida. Now, turn to any page in Drew Friedman's new book, Too Soon, and it's hard not to either smile or laugh out loud. Friedman, who's enjoyed a long and successful career as a caricaturist of the powerful, the successful, and the way overblown ego, not him, he's the people he draws. It just occurred to me that sounded a little funny. Demonstrates in this new collection how much his work has evolved and grown since moving away from the stippling style that was once all he did. In the mid-90s, Friedman moved away from his unique older style of using thousands of individual pen marks, that's what the stippling refers to create a kind of a photorealism in favor of painting his subjects, which is what everyone in this book are. The result is styled the familiar Friedman style, but with a deeper, lusher texture and effect. Too Soon, the title refers to the cover portrait of the late Michael Jackson with dark, hollow eyes. It gathers material from incredibly varied sources, Time and the Weekly Standard, of course, but also The Village Voice and The Nation. His work from Mad Magazine and The New Yorker are also here. This is Drew's second visit to Mr. Media, and we've actually spoken on other occasions. Drew, welcome back to Mr. Media.
Hi, Bob. Thanks. Nice to be here.
Good to have you back. Congratulations on the new book, first of all.
Thanks so much. You might hear a dog barking in the background. It's a beagle. Cartoonists tend to have beagles, so I fall into that category.
Having dogs bark in the background would be nothing new on this show. Unfortunately, I've got the Labrador and the Terrier mix locked up in the next room, but if the mail carrier shows up anytime in the next 25 minutes, you'll hear them.
Well, that's the same thing around here. If a leaf falls in the next county, the beagle will hear it. So, you know, he could erupt it. And there's two of them, actually, but, you know, they can erupt at any moment. So just stand warned, but, you know, we'll try to keep them quiet.
I was going to ask you, I seem to recall two, because there's the famous picture of you holding a beagle in each arm.
I guess, I'm not sure if it's famous, but, you know, thanks for remembering that. Yeah, those are the two beagles that we have, Mary and Hugh. And most people don't know that about me, that we actually raised champion beagles over the years. And they're retired now, but, you know, we have two now. At one point we had seven, and we owned the number one beagle in the country. This is, like, I'm sure this is interesting information for people who are interested in beagles. But, you know,
this is that deep behind-the-scenes interview that we're so well-known for.
In fact, if you want to just steer the entire interview towards beagles, that's fine by me. I can put my wife on, too. That's her specialty.
Well, let's just follow this for just a minute, though. Are you still raising beagles?
We have two. Like I said, just two left, and they're getting a little old, and, you know, they were tired from showing and stuff. But occasionally I'll stick a beagle into my artwork. If you look at my art over the years, including in the book Too Soon, I'm not going to pronounce too soon with the question mark, because that'll get, you know, irritating after a while. So it's just too soon between you and I. But you can occasionally see a beagle pop up in my work. And I used to say beagles are my Ninas, you know, like Hirschfeld had his Ninas. I have my beagles. I would stick them in. You know, you can count the amount of beagles. Now I, you know, refer to my liver spots as being my Ninas. And the little introduction I wrote for this book, that's the title, Liver Spots are My Ninas. So I went from beagles to liver spots, but, you know.
Well, you know, it's interesting, speaking of liver spots. Why no liver spots for Michael Jackson? I mean, right there on the cover.
He didn't quite get to that point yet. I mean, he didn't even get to the point of, I don't even know what he was when he finally died. You know, liver spots never really entered into the equation. He died when he was 50. You know, sadly, he died when he was 50. So he never really became, you know, evolved into what he was supposed to become or what he was becoming. You know, God knows what that was. But, yeah, no, he never got to that category. I'm 52 now, and I think I'm starting to see, you know, maybe I think I saw one liver spot on my forehead recently, so I'm in denial about it, but I'm sure I'm going to be plagued with liver spots just, you know, for what I've inflicted on the world. But, you know, I was like, liver spots just, like, became my specialty after I started doing my Jewish comedian books. And, you know, just started noticing in the photographs I had collected over the years that these spots, you know, existed on these guys. And, I think they enhance a drawing, just, like, bring more humanity into a face. And also, David Levine, one of my childhood idols, and to this day, you know, great caricaturist, sort of introduced me to liver spots in his work. When I was a kid, I'd see these dots on foreheads of, you know, certain people and always wondered about them. I had no idea what they were, and then did a little research, and so I sort of, like, carried that over into my work.
Now, see, I kind of wondered if that was something maybe you saw in, like, older family members. I see that, and I think of Uncle Jaime and, you know.
Uncle Irving?
That was my actual uncle.
I have an Uncle Irving. Yeah, yeah, they're there. Yeah. You know, I didn't really take notice when I was a little kid, but later on, you know, I started to, you know, as I became more interested in faces and drawing faces, and especially old faces, old Jewish faces, old Jewish comedian faces, you know, one thing led to another. And then, you know, I would just notice these things. But, you know, when I was younger, a kid, I took that stuff for granted. It didn't really connect to me till I got older. You know, and I sort of gave up, like you said, the stipple work I used to do, but, you know, I still do dots, but the dots are liver spots. So, you know, there's still a connection to that stuff.
Do you miss that? I mean, it's been many years, of course, but, I mean, you know, your early reputation was built on that. Do you ever miss doing that kind of work?
I don't miss it. In fact, my eyes certainly don't miss it, because it was starting to take an effect on my eyes, and I wear glasses now when I work. But I was warned when I was much younger, doing the stipple comic strip work, from Robert Crumb, sent me a nice letter saying, you know, he enjoyed my work and he was using it in his publication called Weirdo in the early 80s. But he gave me a warning. He said, look, you should think about the future a little bit, you know, with that work you do. And, you know, I hadn't considered it. I sort of, like, you know, pushed that aside, that advice. I didn't think about it until a couple of years later, and I think I took the stipple work, I took it to as far as I could take it, you know. Beyond that, I was never a huge fan of the stipple work. I love Virgil Finley's work and a few other, you know, George Surratt, maybe, and a few other people, but I was never particularly a fan of that work. But it served me well, because I was a little insecure about my drawing abilities, and, you know, I was also trying to draw photorealistic, and the stipple just seemed to work for that work. But beyond that, with the comic strips, and when I wanted to branch out into magazine work and do more caricature work, the stipple was just, it became an albatross and was slowing me down. So when I stopped doing it 15 years ago, I never looked back. You know, occasionally I sell some of my original comic strip work to people, and sometimes I have to touch things up. So I actually have to put on my glasses and get in there and, like, you know, go back and do a little stippling, you know, just to clean things up, you know, panels or whatnot. So, you know, it's a process. You know, my eyes, you know, it really strains my eyes at this point. So I don't recommend it to younger people, you know. But it did serve me well, you know, while I did it.
Tell me a little about the painting now. When you paint, and everyone is different, do you sketch things out? You know, do you take out the pencil and sketch it out first? Do you just sit down with color? What's your process?
It's a fairly simple process to me anyway. I'll do a rough sketch. In fact, Steve Heller from the New York Times is doing a book on cartoonists and their sketchbooks. So I gave him a bunch of things to use for that. So when that book is eventually out, I assume next year, you'll kind of see my process. I'll do a rough sketch. Take, for example, the Obama New Yorker cover I did last year when he was for his inauguration. It's on the back cover of my new book. I did a rough sketch of Obama posed as George Washington the day he was inaugurated in November, just a real rough sketch, and forwarded that to the art director at New Yorker, the cover art director, Françoise Moulet. And she told me to take it to the next level. The next level was a tighter sketch of Obama, same pose as George Washington. And then, you know, beyond that, then, you know, once that was approved, we took it to a painting. So it's three steps, you know, rough, like thumbnail rough sketch, a tighter sketch, and a painting. That's basically the process.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at it now. And if you had to do him today, which president do you think he would look most like as opposed to Washington?
To me, he always looked more like Barney Fife than any president. So if I were to redraw him, that would be Barney Fife.
Now, is that based on his appearance or is that based on his political situation?
A little bit of both. I mean, Barney Fife was like a little nervous. So, you know, Obama doesn't strike me as a nervous type. But, you know, physically, you know, I always thought if it was up to me, I would have put Shemp Howard on the cover of the New Yorker. But, you know, it was fitting that Obama was going to be the guy on the cover that week of the inauguration and dressed as George Washington. Okay, he was the first black president. George Washington was the first president. So it's sort of tied in. Of course, after I did the cover came out of Obama as it was a long process. I talk about it in the book about, you know, going back and forth whether they were going to use it or not. And for a while it looked like they weren't going to use it. And then 2 days before the issue was supposed to come out, it was confirmed it would be the cover. But the art director, again, Françoise, told me that another illustrator had submitted the exact same idea, Obama dressed as George Washington, the day after I submitted my idea. So great minds think alike. And then sure enough, another artist had come out with a painting of Obama as George Washington, the famous unfinished Washington painting, but it was Obama, a year before, which I had never seen. So, you know, there were three versions of it. But, you know, I guess mine got the most attention, which was nice. But, yeah, I think he looks like Barney. Physically, you know, I try to connect. People say, like, well, who does this one look like to you? And it's like Barney Fife is, you know, Don Knotts is who Barack Obama looks like to me.
Now, political cartoonists have focused on his ears a lot. But, for example, in the Washington portrait, we don't see his ears mostly. Well, I mean, his
right
ear
lobe. There's a lobe there. There's a lobe.
A little bit of a lobe.
The jutting out lobe.
Do you find his ears to be that prominent, or are there other characteristics of his face that you find more interesting?
Yeah, the ears are certainly prominent, and you know the structure of his face is very interesting. I'm not a traditional caricaturist where I like concentrate on like what is funny about a face, like big ears or a big nose. Like Jay Leno is every caricaturist's dream face because of the chin and everything. But I don't dwell on it. I do a lot of political work, and half the book is political, as you know, and half of it is show business. It starts off with political work, starting with Clinton, you know, sort of in trouble with Monica Lewinsky in that situation, and leading up to Obama's inauguration and beyond. But my political work, and a good example is the current cover of the Village Voice I did, which is Republican, insane white people is the line, and it's basically Republicans and Tea Party members and other wackos like in straitjackets in institutions. So it's Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin and Andrew Breitbart and Dr. Laura like in straitjackets in institutions. So it's more the situation than the actual faces, you know, although, you know, I try to exaggerate a bit, but I'm not a traditional caricaturist where that's that important to me. I'm more interested in the situation that, you know, I put the people in. And you can see that in the political stuff and too soon, I think.
Well, let's just take a quick 20-second break. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to the Mr. Media Radio interview with artist Drew Friedman, whose latest work is collected in the new book, Too Soon, Famous Infamous Faces, 1995-2010. And we'll be right back.
Ever thought of hosting your own radio show? Now you can by registering at blogtalkradio.com. While you're there, check out our selection of premium packages. To start your own show today, visit blogtalkradio.com.
All right. This is Bob Andelman, and you're listening to the Mr. Media Radio interview with artist Drew Friedman, whose latest work is collected in the new book, Too Soon. So we were talking a little bit about the politics. Do you ever decline a magazine's assignment to do a political feature, a political portrait, because you don't necessarily agree with either the publication's politics or the politics inherent in the illustration?
I suppose I have. I can't think of an example, although one might come to me. But I have done work for right-wing publications like the Weekly Standard. There's a lot of work I've done for the Weekly Standard in the book, as well as the Village Voice and Mother Jones and the New Republic. So, I think I'm an equal opportunity offender. But if I work for a publication like the Weekly Standard, they'll never tell me how to draw a certain situation. I haven't actually done anything for them since Barack Obama came into office. But when I was doing, I mainly do caricatures for them or portraits of people, and they never told me, like, if it was a Democrat, like, go after this guy or make him look any worse. Then I would make a Republican. So, that was sort of like it's inherent in my work that, if you ask me to draw somebody, it's going to be, the way I picture them, a misconception, I think, occasionally, even my mother thinks this, is I'm out to get people. Sometimes I'll show her something. She says, "You really got him." It's like, it was not my intention. I'm not out to get anybody. I try as hard as I can, or at least, to be as honest as I can with the work. And, hopefully that comes through in this book. And some of the other, recent work I've done. But no, nobody has ever told me, like, how to draw something. They'll send me an article, and I can see, like, this current piece in the Village Voice is certainly anti-GOP and anti, Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and Sarah Palin and all that. But I was not told how to draw, make sure to make Glenn Beck look, like, horrible or anything like that. I actually did a cover for The Nation recently of and a parody of Alice in Wonderland with the Tea Party, so Glenn Beck was the Mad Hatter. And they were actually, the art director said, like, I submitted the Glenn Beck sketch, he's the Mad Hatter, and he said, look, we should make him look more insane. And I said, well, I have no problem with portraying Glenn Beck as insane, but the Mad Hatter was not insane. He was mad. He wasn't an evil. They wanted him to look more evil. And I said, it wasn't going to work. I said, he's not an evil character, the Mad Hatter. So that's just the analogy is not going to work. So, and Glenn Beck is a fairly innocuous looking guy. He just looks like any pudgy guy who would work at, he used to be a stand-up comic. So he looks like any other comic who would work at Wacky's Comedy Club in the country. So that was, so I had to say, I had to kind of say no, like, I can't make him look evil. I can make him look crazy, but I can't make him look evil. So there's like little like lines you can't cross that at least I have that, or things are just not going to work.
Mm-hmm. And Drew, you've kind of pointed out that you do portraits of people on both sides of the aisle. Are today's Republicans and Democrats, for that matter, are they more cartoonish than their predecessors, or is it just this is our generation that we've gotten stuck with, and our parents had their own generation of knuckleheads?
I think that's the way it is. I mean, back in the 50s, there were just there were always people to target and always great faces to draw, and I don't think it's any different now than I know a couple of great political caricaturists I've met over the years, and a lot of them like say, well, it's not the same without Richard Nixon, or it's not the same without Ronald Reagan. It's just no fun anymore. And so right now, it's actually not the same with Barack Obama. And it's like, when I was doing work for the New Republic every week, the Republicans were still in office, and there was just so much to go after. And then when Obama came in, I kind of retired from the New Republic because they're just, who are we going to go after aside from Sarah Palin every week or Dick Cheney? There just wasn't that much, it just wasn't the same. So, I haven't been doing as much political work as I have been when Bush was in office. There just seemed to be so much more to, go after in that case. But, and I still want to cut Barack Obama some slack. So, I'm just not interested in, going after him in any way.
I was going to say, one of your Bush portraits that I really like is he's standing on the lawn of the White House, and he's wistfully watching the Carl Rove balloon drift away. And I look at that and I think, can I actually feel sad for him? Because he clearly was lost without Rove in the White House.
Yeah, well, that's sort of, you know, hopefully that's good, because, you know, I wasn't just saying, like, you know, it was like, yeah, it's kind of like a little boy losing his balloon, and I wanted to convey that, like a sad little boy losing his balloon, and the balloon was Carl Rove's head drifting, wafting away, you know. So I'm glad that touched you.
Yeah, I don't care much for Bush or Rove for that matter, but it was an interesting way to capture the relationship. One of the other ones that I really like here was The Losing Zone on page 144, which you did for Emmy Magazine. Now, of course, you know, we're both comics guys, so it touches a nerve. It's people who haven't seen it. It's all these science fiction characters sitting in front of the TV on Emmy night. I just love that.
Right, Emmett. That piece was about how science fiction shows never win Emmys. It was in Emmy Magazine, so it was Rod Serling and people from X-File, et cetera, and the robot from Lost in Space, and Mr. Spock, just sort of, you know, angry and sad that another Emmys is come and gone, and nobody from a science fiction show has won an Emmy. So I'm glad you enjoyed that one. That was fun.
Well, and right before that, this is great stuff. You did the Art for TV Guide that illustrated the Andy Borowitz story, which kind of looked at what Aunt B, for example, might have looked like if Maxim magazine had published in the 1960s.
Right. Yeah, that was a lot of fun to do. You know, and Aunt B and Granny Clampett and Lucille Ball is smoking hot babes. If those magazines had come out back then, so that was a lot of fun to do. In fact, I'm at my signing that's coming up this weekend at Desert Island Comics in Williamsburg. They made a print out of those three images, so they're going to be selling an inexpensive print of that those three babes at my signing, only through Desert Island. So, but yeah, so you know, they should be hanging up in everybody's den throughout the country. But those were fun to do, and I actually wanted to expand and, like, you know, continue with those. You know, even thinking about doing a book of, like, you know, TV moms in bikinis, basically, is what it would be. So, you know, June Cleaver, and, you know, the list goes on. I'm not sure I'll get to that. Everybody has an idea for me, and a couple times a month I'll get an idea from somebody. Like, the main idea I get is, like, well, why don't you do old Italian comedians, the book of old Italian comedians? And I said, well, there's a few. Pat Cooper and Lou Costello is half Italian. And Jackie Gleason's half Italian, and Dean Martin could qualify as a comedian, singer, and there's a few of them out there, Lou Monti. But, you know, I'll leave that to a young Italian artist. I think they should tackle that. And the other one I get is you should do a book of old black comedians, and I think a young African-American artist should tackle that one. Like, I'm going to stick with the Jews. In fact, I am doing a third and final old Jewish comedian book that will be coming out later next year, and then I'm done with the Jews, or at least with the old Jewish comedians. Because I'm becoming an old Jew, so, you know, it's like, I'll have enough there's enough to deal with myself. So I'm doing one more because I did two, and I thought, okay, I'm wrapped up with this. But then, you know, of course, I kept, like, damn, I didn't do Arnold Stang or this one or that one. And people would submit, like, how come you haven't done, you know, this guy or Mae Questo or so many. So I have a list of over 150 now, so I'm slowly, like, going through that list and including some older Jewish comedians like David Brenner, who's actually 73 now, and Richard Belzer and David Steinberg. These guys are in their late 60s, early 70s. So, you know, I'm sort of a little more flexible about who I'm including, and more women as well.
Well, yeah, I was kind of wondering how you came up with enough to produce a third book. But, yeah, when you mentioned, you know, Brenner, God, Brenner is 73. Isn't that hard to believe?
Exactly. Yeah, it seems that, you know, you think of him as a youthful guy. But, you know, then again, back in the 70s, and, you know, with the blown hair, and, you know, he just looked like such a 70s guy. But it's now, you know, 2010, he's 73, you know. But he's still, yeah, I think he still performs. He still seems kind of active, and I know he's funny. But there's a couple of other guys. Well, Woody Allen is 75. He was in the second book. And, you know, some of these guys are getting up there. When I did the first book, I gave myself a little rule, like, you know, guys born before 1930 could qualify. But I allowed Freddie Roman in, the dean of the Friars, who was born, like, 1932. I broke that rule. And now I'm letting people in, you know, 65 and up. So, you know, I conclude Richard Belzer, who will be 65 next year, and some other guys in that category. Albert Brooks is still a little too young. He's only 62, so he can't make it.
For Albert.
Yeah, I actually met Albert recently and had a nice get-together with him, and he was very sweet. His father was actually a comedian named Park Yerkarkis, Harry Einstein. And he died in 1958, sadly, when Albert was only 10, and he died on the dais at the Friars Club. He had a heart attack and died. It was a roast for Lucy and Desi in 1958 in New York. And his father, Harry Einstein, also known as Park Yerkarkis, he used to perform with Eddie Cantor, et cetera, actually did his routine and died on the dais. And Milton Berle screamed out, "Is there a doctor in the house?" And it was, you know, it's a famous legendary show business story, but Albert's fine with it. He asked if his dad was going to be in the book, in the third book. I said, "No, your dad died unfortunately died a little too young, so I can't include him, cannot include him, but, you know." And Albert's a little too young. He's 62. And Albert's older brother, Bob Einstein, is, you know, from Curb Your Enthusiasm, is a little
super
older.
Dave.
But yeah, Super Dave. So he could qualify, but I'm not sure. But I have such a long list now of people going in or people to pick and choose from. So I'm not sure any of the Einsteins are going to make it this time.
Okay.
But Albert's real name is Albert. The joke is Albert's real name, of course, is Albert Einstein. It was his father's little joke there. So, you know, but he changed it to Albert Brooks.
Well, before we run out of time, first of all, and I apologize, and I didn't mention this up top, give everybody the information about the signing at the Desert Island, if you would.
Well, the book signing for the official release party and signing and Q&A with Dave the Spaz of WFMU fame, WFMU Radio, is this Friday at October 8th from 7 to 9 at Desert Island Comics. And you can go to their website to get the information. They're in Williamsburg, Brooklyn, and they were voted the best comic store in all of New York by The Village Voice and Time Out New York. So it's an incredible comic store, and there'll be a lot of people on hand. A lot of cartoonists will be on hand, and people from Facebook and Plonsky, which is a popular Facebook group that, you know, a lot of people should know about. And so it should be a lot of fun, and I'll be doing it. And this print also will be available. There's a brand new print with Aunt Bee and Granny and Lucille Ball, or Lucy Ricardo.
Right.
So it should be a lot of fun. So hopefully, if you're in the New York area, or if not, just come in, and you something to tell the grandchildren about.
And, you know, I meant to mention at the top, too, that you've got an interesting combination here. You've got a blurb from Howard Stern. Howard says, "Drew Friedman's work is insanely great. Everything he does is original." First of all, I know that you're going to treasure that because I'm sure you've heard this, and I listen to the show all the time. He's not doing blurbs or introductions for books anymore, so you got that just in time.
No, he's not. He's not even doing books himself. You know, people see it. Well, Howard, when he got to the third book, but he's basically retired from that. No, that was really sweet. He's always been supportive.
Right, and then the forward to the book is by Jimmy Kimmel. So, I mean, you know, some great stuff just there, even before you open the book.
I was flattered to learn that Jimmy liked my work, and I heard from a few different people, including his then-girlfriend, Sarah Silverman, told me that Jimmy loves what I do. And so, you know, we touched base, and he was more than happy to do it, and I was more than happy to do a portrait of him for the book, which is in there. And so that worked out nicely. You know, Howard has always been supportive. And he talked about the book 2 weeks ago on his radio show after he received it. And so, that was great. It was great to get that quote and get the forward from Jimmy. And my next book is on Sideshow Freaks. It's coming out in a few months. The title is actually Drew Friedman's Sideshow Freaks. It's easy to remember. And the forward to that is by Penn Jillette. And that'll be out from Blast Books early next year. And that's going to be – it's 50 color portraits of famous and infamous or unfamous, non-famous sideshow freaks from the past, full color, and there's actually six Jewish ones too. So
I'm hoping none of my family members made the cut.
I don't think there are any Andelmans in there, but I'll double check. There's a Jewish giant from the Bronx, Eddie Carmel. He's the most famous one, and then Schlitzie might have been Jewish too, because from Freaks, you know, the pinhead from Freaks. That, Schlitzie might have been Jewish.
Right.
Simon Metz was his real name. So.
All right. Well, folks, listen, you can find Drew Friedman's new book, Too Soon, Famous Infamous Spaces, 1995-2010, at great bookstores everywhere, or you can order it online right now at a great price at MrMedia.com, MRMedia.com, and you can see him on October 8th, this Friday, at Desert Island Comics in Brooklyn. Drew, what's your website? People want to go check that out.
The website is, if you just type in my name, but it's, you know, I actually don't have a website now. I disbanded that. I have a print site. The website's, I mean, after Facebook started, it's just like nobody really checks into your web. I mean, this is what I found, anyway. Nobody checks into your, this is a long answer to a short question, but the short answer is I don't have a website. I have a print site where people can purchase my limited edition prints. The newest one was John Lennon, and that's Drew Friedman Net, Drew Friedman, you know what? Best is to type in my name, it'll pop right up.
Okay, fair enough.
It's,
all right. Well, Drew, it's,
you know, if I remember it, I'll let you know.
Okay, we can post it. Not a problem, Drew. It's always a pleasure to talk to you. I always have enjoyed your work, and it's been especially nice over the years to get to talk to you directly and express that. And you know, thanks so much for joining us on Mr. Media today.
Thanks, Bob. Always a pleasure.
All right, take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye bye. And, folks, for more original interviews with your favorite artists, cartoonists, and comic book creators, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com, MrMedia.com. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media radio listeners. Go to audiblepodcast.com/MRMedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/MRMedia for your free audiobook. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@mrmedia.com, mrmedia.com. And you can follow me on Facebook or Twitter, twitter.com/Andelman, or on Facebook, just search Mr. Media Interviews. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate you giving up a piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening.